Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, this is David Heimer. Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. Whenever I went to a Service World Expo or any contractor event, I'd always look for Steve Miles. Steve was always doing something new and interesting. He had great insights into the industry. He saw trends before others saw it. He shared information, ideas freely, and if he got a good idea, he would implement it quickly. Another thing I admire about Steve is that he's a great boss. When you meet Steve's team, you see that his employees respect him and they like him. And another on the long list of reasons to admire Steve is that he and his team are big contributors to their community in so many different ways. So it was no surprise to me when Steve was recently inducted into the Contracting Business Hall of Fame, very well deserved. We first interviewed Steve in episode 42. And we talked about innovation and implementation, so it's a great episode. Go back and listen to it. Steve Miles, welcome back to Profiles in Prosperity.
David, thank you very much. Thank you for the warm welcome. That was very nice.
Well, it's all well deserved. So going back two or more decades during another period of consolidation, you went against the trend and chose not to sell the Jerry Kelly Company. You decided that you could keep it and grow it, but now you've sold. So what changed and what happened?
Well, in the intervening two decades, my children grew up. They got good educations and decided they want to go out on their own paths and weren't really interested in running the business. So I had to come up with a plan B. And with the market the way it is right now, it was a very viable way to move.
Yeah, good time to sell for sure. So what is your role with Jerry Kelly going forward and what are your plans?
I guess I'm kind of like chairman emeritus. I mean, I keep doing what I've always been doing, but the leadership team actually reports to the leadership team with the private equity group, the Flint group. Going forward, I'm going to try and follow in the footsteps of people like Larry Taylor, Ron Smith, you, Matt Michelle. I want to keep giving back to the industry, keep sharing, and just keep involved.
Great. So is it awkward to be involved? I mean, do you go into the office a few times a week or what's that like?
I'm almost every day. I'll take a day off here and there, but and I'll do my normal routine, which was check the numbers, make sure where we're at for the month versus budget and all that stuff. I'll walk around, see if anybody's got any issues. My job really, I feel, is just to block and tackle with the Flint group. You know, a transition's never going to be perfect, but this one was very smooth. Any hiccups or anything were most likely caused by our trepidation going into the process and not knowing what to expect. So they've been great to work with. 3 months into it now, I think we've got a really good cadence and things are working well.
Wow. Good for you. Does it feel awkward for you to be in the office and know that nobody reports to you anymore? Or does it feel like a relief?
It's funny. I mean, I still obviously, I guess, command the authority I always had. But what the relief is, if a problem comes in, okay, yeah, let's get it solved. But you know what? When I go home, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
And to the extent that it's my finances and stuff on the line, obviously it's still my problem. I want to protect the brand. I want to grow the company, but it's not the same level when you've got your name on the signature line of a $1 million loan and you're 900,000 into it or something along those lines.
Yeah, of course. So in the past, we talked with you about innovation, and it's just one of the things I really admired about you. Every time I would talk to you, there was something new that you were working on. It might be labeling thermostats. It might be the system guarantee, the whole system you were guaranteeing. You just always had something going on, and it wasn't just that you would talk about them and do them. You implemented them, tried them out. Sometimes they worked, and you pressed forward, and sometimes they didn't, and you pivoted. So I'm curious, is there anything that you're working on now that's new and different?
Not really new and different. As a team, we're watching the AI, the machine learning stuff very closely because I think it has the potential to really make the customer service experience a lot better when it's ready for prime time. And I think it's about there. Everybody I talk to says within the next year to 18 months, you'll see stuff coming online that it's just mind-boggling. So that's kind of where we're putting our chips right now.
Sounds interesting. Are you going to continue on as a Service Nation mentor?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
As long as I, as long as they'll have me.
Well, I tell you, if I were in Service Nation and I could have you as a mentor, I would jump at the opportunity. You were instrumental on helping so many people grow their business. I remember somebody said that he came in to it and he didn't really know his numbers. And you said something to him like, well, you got to do that. You know, this just has to happen. And the next week he came in and you're like, well, all right, do you have them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're running a business, you need to have your dashboard. You need to know what's going on. It's a business. The primary one is knowing your financials. It's difficult. It's time consuming, but in the end, unless you're doing it as a hobby and just paying the bills at the end of the month, you probably ought to know where you're at. So,
yeah.
And honestly, with modern technology, any of the real time CRMs that they've got nowadays, whether it's ServiceTitan or one of the other ones, you should have a really good finger on the pulse of what's going on in your company almost 24/7.
So you've been in our industry a long time, been very successful. You're a ServiceNation Advisory Board mentor. I think you've won almost every award that there is. You're in the Contracting Business Hall of Fame. And I know there's many more awards that I don't even know about. So what kind of advice do you have for contractors?
Participate in industry events. And actually, there's so many events coming outside of the industry that are home services related as opposed to just HVAC. But go there, because the wealth of knowledge that's in the room, I'm not talking necessarily about the presenters. I'm talking about the other people, the other business people that you can learn from. That's where I always got my best ideas. When we first started going to the ACCA conventions back in, I think it was 1994, the first one we went to in Atlanta, there were just really smart people there like Mitch Kropp, Larry Taylor, Ron Smith and other people. And at the time it was flat rate. You need to go on flat rate. So we did. I just said, okay, they say we need to go on flat rate. So went back to the office, found we'd already bought the Callahan Roach Encyclopedia Britannica flat rate.
That's a good name for it.
And had it sitting on about 25 bookshelves. So I went in and go, okay, we're doing flat rate now. And everybody's like, well, we can't do that. We can't do that. I go, why not? Well, we can't. I go, well, didn't you hear me? We just did. And obviously it took us 6 to 9 months to work out the kinks, but it was just the point of making the decision and moving forward. So I'll throw that out there. If you go to these meetings and you see somebody that looks successful, that you believe is successful, and they tell you that you need to do something, I would put that on the list of stuff to accomplish.
Talk to me about recruiting. Recruiting was an innovative area for you as well. What do you think made a difference in your ability to recruit and retain top talent?
Well, the very first thing is, yes, start with the end in mind. We want all of our employees to be able to make as much money and provide for their families in the way that they choose to. You know, however much ambition they've got, we'll pay them for that. So we structured our pay system around that. And then when you got guys that come in and within their first couple of years are making six figures, it spreads. But you get, you know, it also involves kissing a lot of frogs, because we use a lot of the profiles and knowledge tests, mechanical skills tests, things like that, just to see if they've got the skills to be a good technician. So nonstop recruiting. We kiss a lot of frogs. We're very strict on who we hire, but in the end, it works out.
So last time I visited your office, you had this enormous digital billboard up by it. I think it was right by a highway, wasn't it?
Yeah, our new office is situated right next to an 8-lane expressway.
Yeah. As I recall, you would put up a big sign and you would flash now hiring and stuff like that up there. Do you still do that? Does that work out well for you?
Oh, yeah. We rotate through 8 slides, I believe, and they're changed on a continuous basis to keep it fresh and keep people looking, whether we're offering seasonal specials on equipment or service calls or maintenance we're doing our recruiting thing. And probably the most popular thing is just like a little trivia question that the marketing department puts up there every day. And if they don't do it, they get actually complaint calls because it wasn't updated. Just funny how it was a very expensive investment, but we've gotten the money's worth out of it in marketing value, I believe.
That's really clever. Do you give the answer up there as well, or do you just ask the trivia question?
No, they give both ends of it, you know, that, and there may be a slide between them. Here's the question, blah, here's the answer. But yeah, it's very effective. Evidently, lots of people look at it.
If you're getting complaints because it hasn't been changed, that shows that it's pretty effective. That's great. That alone is worth listening to this podcast. What a great tip.
There you go. And we stumbled into it. We started doing it. We stopped. And that's when the complaints came in. So now they had scrambled to try and find all these little trivia things they can put up there, keeping it fresh. But they're doing a great job.
Oh, man. That's terrific. So how long have you been in the new office? It's no longer new, is it?
I guess technically no. So I guess going on 7 years. Yeah. Doesn't seem like it, but yes.
No. It feels like it was yesterday.
Oh, it does. It does.
Hey, so one of the things that impressed me, I came up there for the opening and you gave us the whole tour of it and it was a magnificent operation. So talk about how you went about redesigning it, because I thought that was a really interesting story and something everybody could learn from.
Our original office that we spent over 40 years at was an old brick building, actually a funeral home down in the older part of St. Charles. And it was just a bunch of cubbies, three stories. You had a basement, a main floor, and upstairs. We had people everywhere. We spread out. We ended up working out of four buildings spread out over about 10 or 11 blocks. It just wasn't conducive to the atmosphere. So when we got this opportunity, I wanted it to be complete open format. So we had that opportunity. We were able to tear out the whole inside of the building and basically turn it into a white box. And then I traveled around. I went to Lou Habaika's. I went to, I think, Reliable down in Atlanta. I went to four or five different contractors, and all of them. That's another thing I recommend to anybody out there. If you want to see something, call and ask. Most contractors will open the door and welcome you right in. So I saw a layout that I really liked. It looked like a hub and spoke. They had the CSRs in a center island, if you want to call it that, where they all faced outward. Around the perimeter were all the dispatchers looking in, so that way, if there was any communications that needed to be done, they could perhaps get somebody's attention and ask the question and not have to put the customer on hold. I really liked the openness and the communication. So we pretty much emulated that. Our 21,000 square foot office, which 2/3 of it is office, the rest of sheet metal shop is all open. We've got about 6 offices, 4 huddle rooms, my office, the accounting office, and the HR. And that's the only private offices we have. Everything else is open. All the huddle rooms have windows on them so you can see in, see out. Although they do have curtains in case it's a privacy thing. But yeah, I really wanted to, actually, our sheet metal shop, but the wall between the sheet metal shop and the office has got double pane, sound resistant glass, but there's windows to our training room, the sheet metal shop, everywhere. I wanted a complete open format after the 40 years of working out of 4 different buildings.
Right. So there was something else. I can't really remember this, but there was sort of a flow of raw materials and purchase stuff and a flow from that into inventory and then out into the truck bays. Can you talk about that a little bit?
We were able to start with pretty much a clean sheet design. So I wanted the flow of materials, to your point, to make sense so that people weren't running into each other to get things. So basically it makes a big flat pieces of sheet metal. The equipment, everything comes in one end. Then it gets staged where it goes. The sheet metal goes to the other, gets stored, goes to a plasma table, goes to a insulating table, goes around the circle to the bending tables, gets put together, and then finishes the circle and heads to the doors where the guys' trucks are. Now, we built this out. We had one loading dock door, but we blew out 6 more doors. So we've got 6 trucks backed up with a little ramp into each one so we can stage their jobs indoors right by their truck. And in the morning, they open the overhead door, lay down the ramp, and roll everything in.
Man, what an efficient operation. That's great. How many people do you have at Jerry Kelly now? In total?
It's kind of fluid. I'm going to guess right now, I haven't looked lately, about 68.
Very good. And one of the things I remember is that you guys were sort of concentrated right around St. Charles. Is that still the case, or have you opened up your territory more?
We're expanding, but we still do probably 95% of our work within a 10 or 12 mile radius of our office.
Have you considered any branch offices or anything like that?
Well, we do have a branch office, if you want to call that. It's more of a marketing location. It's a building we rent on a major thoroughfare that we use for training and service meetings to give it some traffic and stuff like that. But it's on a busy artery with no billboards, so it's kind of a billboard location. But
again, back to the highway with a billboard concept. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then we like to hold service meetings down there twice a week. And that way, right in the middle of rush hour, while the traffic's backed up, we've got 8 to 10 trucks pulling in and pulling out with it about an hour apart from each other.
That's great.
But yeah, as far as expanding, that's up to the new owners. I think they want to row. They've signed a 5-year lease or 3-year lease with an extension on this building. So they're planning on growing it organically from where we're at. That's kind of their business model.
Yep. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Well, Steve, thank you so much for doing this with me. Was there any question I should have asked you that I didn't?
I would just like to say for anybody out there that's considering selling their business, just go into it with an open mind and then don't worry about what they do to your business, because as long as the check cashed, it's really their business. If you can keep that attitude and keep a sense of humor, it makes things a lot easier.
That's good advice. It's very stressful selling your business. And I think part of it is just the emotional part of it. And of course, it's a really big financial event in your life as well.
Well, and it's also an emotional event for all the employees. I mean, emotions are running about 5,000%. It takes a while to calm down and navigate that. So be very thoughtful if you do sell your business, how you approach that. We were very lucky. To my knowledge, we did not lose anybody. Yeah. Is there changes? Are things different? Yes. But is all things considered, it's going very smoothly.
That's great. So when you sold the business, this is something that I've heard a number of discussions on both sides of it. When you were selling the business, entertaining offers, did you let the employees know that that was happening? Or did you just think that's just going to stress everybody out? I'll announce it when it's done.
Yeah, no reason to spook the horses.
Yeah,
because it's such an unknown. And as soon as you announce it, it's a done deal when it may not be anywhere close to a done deal.
Yeah.
So we let our leadership team know, but then we had two deals fall apart. And it ended up being a year later before we finally got a deal that stuck that with a group that was great. But when we finally got to that last deal, nobody knew about it but the general manager and myself. We didn't want anybody else to get, you know, their emotions going or anything like that out of turn. We waited till the deal was closed before we announced it.
I actually think that that's better for the employees because people imagine the worst. You know, they believe they've got to prepare for the worst, and they don't. In our industry, nobody wants to come in and lay people off or anything like that. They want to come in and keep everybody.
100%. It always amazed me, but they don't come in looking for successful companies and want to tear them apart and ruin them. They want to build on the successes. And again, they might have a little different opinion on how to get there. But I mean, that nobody's going to be just willy-nilly let go because we're cutting heads.
Well, Steve, again, wonderful advice. It's just always wonderful to talk to you. You've been such a great person to know in the industry. You've run an amazing company and you've helped out so many other people. So thanks for all that. And thanks for being on the podcast with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, David, thank you. That's very humbling. But I want to thank you also. Between what you and Matt did at Service Nation, it really gave myself and a lot of other contractors the tools and the network we needed to do what we've done. So thank you.
Thanks. That's very kind of you. I appreciate it.
Well, you have a great day, David. It was very nice to talk.
Hi, this is David again. 3 quick notes. 1, if we provided any value today, would you please give us a good rating on whatever app you're listening on? It would help us a lot and help get our message to more people. 2, would you recommend us to a friend or colleague? Just as in your own business, personal recommendations are powerful. 3, we're always looking for great interviewees and topics. If you have an idea for us, if you know someone who should be interviewed, or if you would like to be interviewed, don't be modest. Just shoot an email to pip@newmediaempire.com. That's PIP, like Profiles in Prosperity, @newmediaempire.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening and thanks for your support.